This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios. Speak and be heard. This podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communications experts and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide format printing for signs, as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? You better visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com/Boise or call 208-IMPRINT. That is 208-467-7468.
Welcome to Curating Boise, the podcast that celebrates the hustlers and the shakers, the ones that took the short route of being their own creative boss right away, or the ones that left their corporate jobs, like me, your host, Catherine Wojcik. Good morning, and I say morning because it is morning for us here at Curating Boise. Normally, we're recording at 4 in the afternoon. Couldn't make that time slot this week, so I picked up this 10:45 slot with my good buddy Jay.
Hello, Jay's here.
Hey, and for obvious reasons, since it's 10:45, we are drinking delicious coffee from Flying M.
Flying M. What's your coffee of choice?
I just went for the drip.
Drip, okay. I go for an Americano, which is like the big mean brother of the drip.
It is. Well, I usually do a hot Americano, and I'll add an extra shot.
Ooh, there you go.
So I take it up a level. But today I just went for the drip, which I got to say, this is pretty mighty. Should have found out what it is. But Flying M, Flying M Coffee, that's been in downtown Boise for quite a while. They're on the corner of Idaho and 5th, right?
Yeah, 5th.
Yeah. So that's where Jay and I met up this morning. So today we're going to, maybe take a little different spin on curating Boise. Sometimes there's conflicts with guests. Maybe something pops up in their life. For me, it was being sick. So I had to reschedule a guest that was scheduled for Monday. So my friends Lindsay and Mike, that are formerly known as Gray Jays, and now I believe it's Body Parts Design, they will be on next week's episode. So that would be episode 7 for them.
I'm looking forward to that. Episode 7 already.
Yeah, well, we're episode 6.
Wow.
That's crazy. I feel like when I first grabbed the slot, I thought it was going to take me forever just to get to like episode 2, let alone here, sitting here with you doing episode 6. But anyway, so here we are. It is Wednesday morning, and we are recording episode 6. And as I was trying to think about, what we would talk about, of course, my main thought was I'm going to focus on Jay. We're going to bring more about his painting because you've made some life choices since the first episode.
I have. They weren't influenced by anybody, by the way.
No, not at all. Not by me, not by Eric. Mm-hmm. No, we're heavy pushers for Jay to have left his mainstream job and take the bull by the horns and branch out on his own, which you did.
That was good advice. I had to take it.
Good. So let's chat about that for a quick sec.
Yeah. So, I've been kind of doing the normal job thing ever since my girls were born. I have twin girls. They're 7 now. And just been working whatever I could find here and there just to pay the bills and make it happen. But with the conflicts of schedule between me and my wife and trying to juggle all of the responsibilities of, running a house with two kids, it just got really stressful not having any flexibility and any really time for myself or time for my family. So it was a big kind of push and a lot of encouragement from people that I admire and look up to, and a lot of encouragement from my family, a lot of support and help from my family, which I wouldn't have done it without. So
Support is huge, that's for sure, especially for a big decision like that. And I mean, I know that is what propelled me to leave my engineering job was because of the support that I had. The main person that, of course, I needed the support from was my husband, Ed, who I've been married to now. Gosh, I believe it's 37. I'd have to do the math. We've been together for 40 years.
Yeah.
So a long time, probably even longer than that. But anyway, my main supporter. So yeah, support is huge, especially from the spouse. The spouse has to be comfortable.
Yeah, you can't do it without, you know. And I had some long talks with my wife just about, you know, our overall situation and, you know, my moods and stuff coming home from work, just being exhausted and stressed out all the time. And it just wasn't really a healthy place. So,
right. I mean, and not to take away from the people that's, you know, that was their path, staying in a corporate job or continuing to work for an aerospace company. I mean, I know my husband would probably love to not be working for a corporation and maybe, you know, building wood furniture or working as his own construction company. But sometimes I think that maybe that part of him had to play the back seat to me being more aggressive.
Yeah,
for my dream.
You know, without that corporate job that he has, you know.
Oh, for sure.
The financial support.
Absolutely.
Has been, I'm sure, important.
Well, it's, yeah, there's a lot of, I'm very fortunate because when you have that, you know, there is backing initially when you start your business. So that does help. So I'm extremely grateful that my husband has stayed in the corporate, I guess, the corporate stream. But, you know, there's a lot of people here in Boise that's just what they're going to do, and they're happy doing it.
There's a lot of people that are really good at that.
And they love it, and they are good.
Yeah. My soul was not going to let me keep going.
So you were not
going
to be good at your job for long stay.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I can be flexible, and I can kind of get good at pretty much anything, but or not get good at it, but at least make it work. But there's certain things that I think people are cut out for and not cut out for.
I mean, do you think that I guess it's an old term, you know, or the old saying, you have to be happy at what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think
you have to love your job.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, look, a job is a job, right? I mean, people have great jobs. Some people have really crappy jobs.
And, yeah.
You know, some people get a lot of fulfillment out of a job.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that sort of thing. And I've had really great jobs in the past, and I've had some really not great jobs in the past. And my most previous one wasn't that bad. It was just not as flexible as I wanted it to be able to spend time with my family and
right.
really develop, you know, a much stronger relationship with my daughters and with my wife. And that kind of takes the front seat for me.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, key to happiness with your job, whether it's, you know, corporation or being your own boss, if your family that you know, you're raising and your wife, if they're not happy while you're doing any of those, you have to reevaluate that.
Well, not only that, but yeah, you know, if you're not happy and if it's not something that
sure.
is fulfilling you, that's going to show in your face. That's going to show in your demeanor when you come
right.
home from work. And it's going to take a toll.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. I agree with that. I mean, you know, when I made the decision to leave my job at Northrop Grumman, it wasn't because I necessarily didn't like what I was doing. I enjoyed it. I felt as a woman engineer, a minority woman engineer, and I never viewed myself any less than any of my work.
Accomplishments.
Yeah. I mean, I felt like everything I wanted to do and accomplish, I went at it full bore. I did it. I didn't look at myself any less or greater than anyone else. I just felt like I was being acknowledged for what I was putting forth. But I was happy where I was at. It's just at that particular time in my life, Ed was in Afghanistan with the Air Force. He was going to be gone for a minimum of 6 months. And, you know, our son was getting ready to go in the Air Force, Chaz and Taylor. The middle child was, she was maybe her freshman or sophomore year at Northern Arizona University. And the twin girls, Arizona, and the twins were, maybe sophomores in high school. There's just a lot going on. like milestone wise.
Yeah.
And with him being gone and 13 hours ahead, you know, there wasn't a lot of co-parenting happening at the time. I just felt for me being the one on the state side, I did not like going to work every day. And my hours were great, 7 to 3, but I just didn't like that. And I needed to do something different that was going to enable me to be able to be there for all these milestones that are happening with our kids. Yeah. That's why I left that job.
Yeah, so that was the main motivation for me is, you know, I just want to be there as much as possible. And that's my, you know, my wife and I, that's always been our biggest goal since our kids were born. But let's dive then into that a little bit more with you. You know, so what was that transition like leaving your incredibly lucrative job as an aerospace engineer? I mean, that's something that people really strive for.
Yeah. It, and I think, you know, it was, I was,
scary.
I had a good salary. It was scary. I'm sure Ed was beyond scared, given that he was in war.
Yeah.
He was, you know, the decision was made, probably before, I mean, he always knew what I wanted to really be doing. It's just that with 4 kids, club sports, living where we were living in Manhattan Beach at the time, you know, it's not a cheap place to live.
No.
You know, we kind of had to have those 2 jobs. But then it wasn't working for me. And I made that decision probably really before really formalizing it with him. I figured, you know, took an opportunity that they offered me a package to leave because we were going through rifts there anyway. So it was kind of like a voluntary, you know, layoff. So I had a little package and I made the decision and I figured when I tell him, it's already
done
the next day. Yeah. Done.
What's he going to do about it?
Exactly. And his reaction was, you know what? I'm really glad. I'm glad that you're going to do this.
That's amazing.
Hope it works. And if it, you know, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And
again,
so,
that support is key.
Yeah. So that made me really happy. Gave me a tremendous amount of ease. And then I just kind of went right into it immediately, figuring out what my name was going to be. I would like to have had a brick and mortar right off the bat. Yeah. That took a little bit of time. But, yeah, it went good. The kids were super excited. And it gave me a little more freedom with them.
Yeah.
Actually to focus on them too.
Now, do you remember, was there a moment or a point, you know, what was the catalyst? What was the moment that you decided, you know, screw this, I'm going to quit. I'm going to do my own thing. And I'm going to work for myself, not for somebody else. Was there a single solitary moment or was it just a long time of this is something that's got to change?
It's something that I've always wanted to be a home chef or a chef or a baker, whatever it is, for a very, very long time. And it's just always been in the back of my head. But having 4 kids kept, I guess, that dream, you know, at the back, tucked in there and thinking, oh, I'll never be able to do that until I'm 60.
Yeah.
When the kids are all grown and gone. I'm thinking of all these things that are swirling around in my head because at that time there were so many things going on and, Ed's always been, you know, you can always do whatever you want. And we've always been that with our kids, but yet I was holding on to something for a really, really long time. And I guess for me, it just was him not being here and in that situation of where he was at. And our kids taking all these different directions. And I guess, and Chaz was getting ready to go into the Air Force too. So that was making me I had a little anxiety going on at that time too.
Yeah.
And it seems weird to say, wow, she had anxiety. So she left a job that was steady to do something. But honestly, for me, that gave me such a great sense of calm.
Yeah.
I just felt like, okay, I'm in charge of what Catherine's daily activities are going to be.
Yeah, that's so big. And, you know, that was big for me, too. There's so much anxiety of thinking, like, you know, how am I going to ever get out of here? And how am I ever going to do my own thing? And, you know, when you have kids, you know, you were at a point where your kids were a lot older than mine are. And they were at a point in their life where they had a lot of these milestones coming up. Like you said, they were playing sports, right. They were doing all these things, and
yeah.
You felt like you were going to miss out on that stuff.
Definitely. Oh yeah, for sure. And you know, Chaz's decision to go into the military at that time, and that was a big decision. So, you know, he needed things, you know, getting driven to the Air Force base, just advice, some of my attention. Taylor, I wanted to be able to pick up and go for 2 or 3 days to NAU and visit her, you know, and I was able to do that quite a bit, you know, take the girls with me, go to volleyball tournaments. Maybe the girls didn't want to play volleyball anymore. Okay, well, what are we going to do then?
Yeah.
You know, just things.
Yeah.
Where if I was busy, you know, working for Northrop Grumman and focusing on what engineers focus on, you know, your time, your mental capacity for the things that should be very important.
Right. And, you know, the one thing that was big for me is I had this thought that, you know, my girls are never going to be super happy or super proud if I climb the top of some corporate ladder.
Sure.
But they are going to be happy and proud if I'm there cheering them on from the sidelines in a game, or if I'm encouraging them or teaching them how to do something.
Right. You
know, those are the things that I think they will remember.
Well, probably too, because the girls see you doing your painting on the side while you were working, and they probably noticed the shift.
Yeah. But I'm sure your kids notice the same thing too, especially in high school when you're like trying to figure out what you're going to do with your life.
Yeah.
And then your mom's like, you know what? Screw this. I'm doing my own thing.
Yeah.
That's got to be hugely influential. Did it have a big effect on them?
You know, it did. I think that especially the twins, because, you know, Taylor was away at college. You know, Chaz was much older. He was super supportive though. My first little brick and mortar was right across the street from MiraCosta High School. So the twins would come over on their breaks. They'd bring their friends. We were actually featured in the Easy Reader together, and I had the girls there with me. And I do believe that while the girls are proud of where my career was as a woman engineer, I think that plays second seat really to what I'm doing now with Salvage Sisters and Son and Savory and Sweet. I think they're just like, wow, mom, you've done this. Like, you've done it. This is amazing.
Have you seen them take that ball and run with it themselves? Have they shown any interest in working for themselves?
Yeah, they all, well, Taylor has always, Taylor's always been the steady route, very intelligent young lady. So she works for Netflix. I don't know that she would be one to ever leave her job.
Yeah.
I think that might be scary for her now. Anyways, I mean, she's 29. Yeah. So, I mean, my decision came much later in life. So right now, no. The twin girls, Reed, she had like an online zine called Overmag. She did that for a while, interviewed bands and wrote articles and started her own Overmag.
Very cool.
Reagan also is like an entrepreneur herself, does a lot of articles for my niece's magazine. Well, they call them zines, Amadeus. And so she's, you know, does a lot of writing for that. She also does her own writing for her own self. She wants to be like a band promoter.
Nice.
But both girls have some college, but I think enough where, because to us, for Ed and I, it's very important that you have some secondary schooling.
Okay.
You know, we learn a lot in high school, but you learn other things in college.
You learn a lot more about
how the world actually is and how you're responsible for your education, how to complete things. You know, you complete 3 courses, that's amazing.
Yeah.
On your own. Not that you don't have to get up every morning. So I think the girls, they do have the passion to, you know, to do things on their own for sure. Chaz, of course, you know, is in with me on Salvage Sisters and Son for as much as he can be.
The Air Force coffee side as well, right?
He's got Salvage Coffee Co. So yeah, that's his entrepreneurial. So yeah, all the kids, I think, have it. Maybe Taylor a little bit less.
Yeah. Well, like I said before, you know, some people
But she's a supporter.
Yeah. Some people love having that job. And some people have great jobs that, you know, make them feel fulfilled. And I've never once heard Taylor complain about her job.
No, Taylor is really, really good at her job. Yeah. So
yeah,
they're lucky to have her.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's important to note as well that, you know, leaving the corporate world and starting off on your own isn't necessarily the path for everybody. You know, everybody's got their own motivations and their own things going on in their life.
And I was not, like I said earlier, I was not unhappy where I was at. I was enjoying it. It just, at that time, it just was like, you know what? Nah.
But you wanted to be a chef. You wanted to cook.
I did.
Yeah. Did you cook a lot growing up?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so. A lot of my zeal for cooking is, you know, of course, my mom, my grandmothers, they've cooked large, you know, meals.
Yeah.
I like cooking a lot of food.
Yeah. Well, I mean, especially growing up in a Hispanic family, I'm envious of some of the meals that you guys probably prepared.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, watching my uncles, you know, pig roast, you know, on the ground, and carnitas and carne asada and all those yummy things, lots and lots of food, lots of big family gatherings. And then, you know, Ed and I, we've liked to have all of our friends over all the time and open our door and make food, and everyone would bring stuff as well, which
is great.
A sense
of community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome. So,
well, and I feel like that is something that you grew up with, that sense of community in your culture. And that's something that I think that you bring to the table with Savory and Sweet as well. You know, you
it
do
is.
The charcuterie boards, you do a lot of banquets, a lot of weddings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
All of these are promoting big gatherings and of people and, you know, getting your loved ones together and enjoying food together.
It is. And I'll tell you, so like I've done with Savory and Sweet, I did plated service, I did buffet service, you know, all of those more high-end catering jobs. But as I got going, and I'll say five, six years ago, I realized that I was always in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I don't necessarily need to be out there, you know, meeting the people. I had a good friend, one of my best friends, Trisha, who was always my front person. She handled everything. But then I realized I kind of like chatting with people. I want to see who's eating my food. So I decided to do more family style service.
Okay.
And focus on grazing tables, because to me, grazing tables, you know, charcuterie, cheeses and spreads and crackers and whatnot, you know, it's everyone's kind of there.
Yeah.
Everyone's knocking arms and hands, and you might, you know, meet a guest at the wedding that you don't even know. Oh, hey, how do you know Jay? You know, how do you know Catherine? And conversation starts, and family style service, you know, everyone's at large farm tables. And I think that to me made me most happy seeing that.
And I feel, you know, I've had the pleasure of working alongside you at some
of your
events.
You're amazing.
I love doing that sort of work. Because like you, I like kind of getting people together.
You do.
And seeing that.
You're good
at
it.
You know, the thing I like about the grazing tables and the charcuterie boards is when you're doing a plated service, everybody's sitting around a table and they've got their own plates. They're feeding themselves. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of mingling or conversation.
No chit-chat, right?
No chit-chat.
Yeah.
But when you've got a charcuterie board, everybody's standing there.
Oh, yeah.
They're talking. They're meeting new people.
Totally.
Yeah, that's a whole new experience, and I really think that's important.
Yeah, and even the, like that family style, like that huge wedding that we did, you know, you guys, as a servers, you're dropping platters of salmon or tri-tip or potatoes or the salad, and people, the whole table that you're taking that to, they're all going, wow.
Yeah.
Instead of each person getting their plate going, you know. So, yeah, I think that for me, that became my focus, and I think that's what sets me apart too from other people in town doing catering. We have some amazing caterers in town. Sometimes when I can't handle something, I love referring to other ones, but I definitely specialize in grazing tables, and I'm even working towards taking the family style off for 2022.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's something I think I'm just, I don't know. I guess maybe that's my age.
Yeah. Well, again, I think that offering grazing tables and charcuterie boards and that commingling and that that kind of friendly conversation that comes about in those kinds of meals, I think that's something that not everybody offers, and especially not all the banquet companies and that sort of thing. So
yeah. So there's room.
Yeah.
Right. And I found my little niche, I think, with that.
Yeah. So Savory and Sweet was your first foray into entrepreneurship.
Entrepreneur, yeah. For sure, savory and sweet.
How'd you get into junkin'?
So the junkin' part, my parents have always had, quote unquote, antiques. And I would say more antiques than what I work with, which is vintage. And so I kind of grew up with my parents always going to antique shops and whatnot. And then as, you know, Ed and I, we got married, we were over in England for our first few years of marriage, and we used to love to go to car boot sales. And car boot sales, you know, they roll out onto the pastures, they open up the boots of the car, which is a trunk.
Yeah, those are trunks here.
Those are trunks here in America, boots over there, and they would open up, and we went to some, and I bought some, like, old Singer sewing machines.
Nice.
We bought a scale that sits in Salvage Sisters and Son, and I probably can say at least one customer a day will ask if that's for sale. And that's the one thing, well, one of two that I will never sell because we bought that at a car boot sale probably for like £2.
Oh, wow.
Which at that time was $3.
Yeah.
And it says made in England. And I've managed to keep the top of the scale, you know, I don't know what that's called, the plate that sits on the scale, those two parts together.
Yeah.
For our entire marriage. And that's we've amazing. Moved a lot. So,
well, that's one of those pieces that really kind of reminds you of where you got started.
Right? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, that, and then my love for, you know, just collecting. Our house had a lot of antiques in it. We would go to antique auctions in England. So we brought back a lot of pieces from England that were legitly antiques. I mean, these things were like 150 years old.
Yeah.
And we brought those back. And I would take the kids along to garage sales all the time. So the kids learned how to repurpose.
I see. And did you always have a knack for that sort of thing, or at least the value of items?
I think I did. I mean, I felt like when I would see something, I was able to be like, okay, well, we're not going to necessarily use that as, you know,
its purpose.
Yeah. We're not going to change it, but we're going to use it for this.
Yeah.
Something completely different.
I love that.
And, you know, the kids were really getting into that too. And they're really into vinyls. So they would always look for, you know, the old records.
Yeah.
And stuff. And then, gosh, probably six years ago, Chaz and I together really started going to a lot of estate sales and collecting, and it started kind of hoarding up on the side of our home.
Yeah.
And Chaz wasn't living there. It was Ed and I and the twins. And I told Chaz, I'm like, dude, God, we've got to figure out how to get rid of some of this stuff.
Yeah.
I think we need to do a flea market. That was kind of scary.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah, because now we're taking the things that we thought were really awesome.
And hopefully other people
and people were going to look at that and go, okay, they have a good eye. We were really hoping for that. And, you know, We started doing it, and we did really, really well. And we were really good at passing off the good find at the good price that we found it at. Sometimes we find things for free, and we really wanted to make it affordable. So we wanted to make our money back. We wanted to make enough money where we were like, okay, if we made $400 at this flea market, we'll split $200, mm-hmm. and then we're going to take the other $200 and we're going to put it right back into junkin'.
That's awesome.
What we did all the time.
Yeah. Well, and that's something you and I had talked about earlier this morning too, when we met for coffee, is the monetary side of everything.
Right.
You know, and so that's actually pretty refreshing to hear you say that, you know, making top dollar off of all mm-hmm. of these items that you may have gotten for free or whatever wasn't really the motivation. It was mostly trying to find other people who thought it was just as cool as you thought it was.
Oh gosh. Yeah. I mean, like your paintings, right? I mean, so you just created a whole series of wonderful things.
I'm working on a few things.
Right? Yeah. And you shot me some pictures and you were like, you know, because you posted them on Instagram, and right away you had some hits for people wanting to buy them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was telling you, it's not about, like, you don't want to undervalue it because it's your work.
It's a delicate balance, really.
Yeah. And you don't want to shoot too high.
Because nobody's going to buy it and you're not going to make right? any money.
So you got to find that right amount.
Yeah.
And
I've been the same way. It's like, you know, like this cost me X amount of money, probably not a lot to make, or, you know, it's just something that I really enjoy to do. So
yeah,
I'm not going to try to go out there and get rich off of this stuff. You know, that's not my motivation.
Right.
Not my motivation is not to, you know, make it big and be some world renowned artist. My motivation is to just to make enough money to support my family and then spend time with my family.
Yeah, and I think you can't really put a price on that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's, and we did talk about that. I think that's really important. Because so many people, like, you know, we've had a lot of vendors over the years, other pickers, other vintage people. Well, I wouldn't even say they're pickers, because there are people who deal in antiques and vintage that don't necessarily go out and find it the way I do.
Okay.
You know, like in the past episode when Eric and I talked about it, or when Chaz and I were together, because just for the people listening, Chaz lives elsewhere and not here with me. So our picking adventures are when he comes here to visit, or when I go to visit him. And, you know, Chaz and I are talking about doing a big road trip. So that will happen. But a lot of people don't do that. They'll bop into a shop. Right.
Buy something from someone and then try to flip it and
make
a profit.
We've had people buy from us at a flea market, say Long Beach Flea Market, and literally hike it off to their booth and resell it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of strange. At first, that was kind of weird to me, but I was like, all right, if they can make $40 more on it, so be it. That just wasn't, so people would ask us, wow, you should boost your prices.
Yeah.
We just were like, no, we like people coming to us because they're like, wow, your prices are really good.
Right. Yeah.
And if people can flip it, that's great.
Yeah.
Have at it.
I try to do similar thing, you know, with my art. I'd rather have somebody buy it, something that they can afford, that they're going to put up in their house and they're going to look at and they're going to appreciate it and like
right.
it. You know, again, I'm not doing this to make $1 million, you know, that'll never happen. And I'm okay with that. But, I think that if somebody else can get some enjoyment out of something that I've made with my hands, or they can get enjoyment out of something that you've found somewhere that would just be rotting in a pile.
Oh, yeah.
Then why not brighten somebody else's life? You know?
For sure. And I think, well, your art specifically, art seems like something that a majority of people think, I can never buy art. I can never afford art. And I think what you're doing is amazing. Great pieces. Of course, I bought one for Ed, you know, the cowboy scene. And then Taylor.
Yeah, Taylor.
Loved it. And they hired
that
you? Is
happy.
That the word? They hired you?
Well, she commissioned me for a piece.
Commissioned. Yeah. There you go. See, I got to get the lingos down on all the different things.
Yeah.
She commissioned you to paint something for her and Nate.
Yeah. And I love that that's going to go on their wall. And
it
they're
going
to look at it and it's going to make, you know, bring some color to their house.
Totally. Yeah. So I think, you know, your pieces are, people see them and they're like, oh man, I want to hang that, you know? And I think, you're going to go places, Jay, for sure.
Well, I just want to go home and hang out with my kids and my wife. That's
and
all I want to go.
I know. But there's also something to be said for, you know, having your stuff in other people's homes.
Well, and that's the key to me, is there's just somebody else is going to get some enjoyment out of it. And it's going to brighten their day when they look at it.
Right. You know? Oh, well, before, I mean, we'll probably touch on it at the end, but before I forget, I don't want to, you're going to be at the Boise Flea.
Yeah.
That's going to be, the first flea is April 4th.
11th.
No, 11th.
Yeah.
Sorry, the second week.
Yeah, weekend. I paid money. I committed to it. Now I guess I have to do it.
Hey,
I'm nervous.
No, don't be. I've done the Boise Flea a good handful of times for Salvage Sisters and Son. I've even sold Savory and Sweets there a few times within Salvage Sisters and on its own. And it's an amazing flea market to do. You're going to do well.
I've shopped there several times.
Yeah.
And I love going
good
and
people.
Looking around. I love that a lot of it is handmade art. A lot of it's stuff that people put time and effort into. And it seems like a pretty good crowd, so I'm excited for it.
And Erin, the purveyor of the flea market, she's amazing. She's a junker herself, and she's bubbly as heck, and she always puts on a good flea, and, you know, she's super supportive.
I'm excited to go out there and meet people, you know, and even if I don't sell a single piece, but I shake some hands and meet some people, and they say, hey, I'm looking for this, then maybe I can drum up some business that way.
And how lucky, it's $40, literally.
Oh, so cheap. I mean,
$40 for a
booth.
I
almost couldn't turn it down.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
No. So, hey, everyone out there, you know, by the time this will drop next Wednesday. In time to go to the Boise Flea. So go find Jay and, you know, find some of his good stuff.
I'll probably be painting on site.
Nice. Even better.
Well, that's so that I don't have to sit there and stress out about whether or not people like my stuff.
Right.
It's going to keep me my mind occupied.
So. Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah. I think that's what I do even with Salvage Sisters and Son stuff. You know, I load it up in my tiny truck and I pull into my little slot and, you know, I clean things as I'm doing it. So, you know, you
got to keep occupied. Well, otherwise, it's just too much.
You don't
stress.
Feel like you're waiting for that person to walk into your booth and hopefully buy the stuff that you think is super cool.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. So that's it. I mean, that's how we, you know, we just started doing those flea markets and we started doing larger flea markets and now we do larger shows.
Yeah, you've got a couple coming up. You got Logan, Utah coming up.
Logan, Utah is going to be coming up. That's actually been a really, really good one for us. And that's going to be May, 13th, 14th, and 15th, I believe. It's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday show. But that weekend, I'm actually going to be double dipping in my businesses because I'll be jamming back for the 15th for a wedding that you're going to be helping with.
Yeah, I'm excited for
that. Yeah. So Chaz will be there and one of the daughters in Utah will be helping him out. So that's going to be a big weekend for both of my businesses. And I'm really excited about to see how that all plays out.
Yeah.
But Logan is about the biggest show that we've done. I mean, we've done Junk in the Trunk, which is, I think they're based out of Arizona. And then we've done a couple of other ones that I'm just kind of brain farting on. I can't think of them
but
right
Logan's
now.
But Logan's nice because it's what, Logan's only 4 hours?
4 hours. Yeah. It's a good drive. I don't do local shows anymore in Boise. Well, because I have a brick and mortar. I feel like if I'm going to spend $200 and something on a booth.
It's getting pricey.
It is. Yeah. I'd rather spend $200 going out and finding good shit and bringing it into the shop or having a pop-up shop. During the weekend, a show's going on.
Yeah, you guys did a little block party. Like a month or two ago.
Yeah, we did. When I'm going to do a pop-up in my own shop, and when I have a pop-up, when I say it's a pop-up, I'm inviting other curators of things, like, say, Bridget or Gray J's or...
Eric's got his
shop
open.
Eric's got his shop next door, but I invite other... makers into my shop, and then I really like to get all the other shops on the block to stay open.
Yeah.
Because it's beneficial. I mean, Southeast Boise, that historical block, we haven't been full in years.
And it's one of those spots where, you know, it's an amazing historical building. You know, all those buildings there.
They're all old.
They're fantastic buildings. But it's not a place that there's, like, great parking for.
No,
there's
it's
not
tough.
A lot of foot traffic. So
exactly.
When you do those kind of pop-ups or you do those block parties or whatever you call them.
Yep.
I think that's really nice because a lot of people come by that, might necessarily never have stopped.
Yeah, I mean, the last time we did it, I had Off the Grid Pizza.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Oh my gosh, that ended up working really well. And that was a strange time because that's when the governor threw us back to stage two.
Yeah, that was full-blown COVID time.
I was at Powder House getting beer. I went to go get more. We had tanks. Eric was able to go to Powder House and get tanks of beer. And then the gal that was supposed to come with the truck, it just was a big fiasco. And I was heavily involved in wanting to do the block party, so we just went for it.
Yeah.
And it was raining that day.
It was.
Oh, my gosh.
But it was a pretty good turnout. I mean,
you brought your stuff to the shop?
Yeah, I brought a few things. You had Corey Grubb placing
Corey
live
Grubb
music.
Was in there? Yeah. We try to make it big. We try to go big.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think, had it not been COVID, had it not been a rainy day.
Everyone got scared again and went back into their shelters.
Yeah.
We're like those potato bugs that curl up in little round balls and we, roll off to our spots. But... yeah, we did it, and that was a good one. I know Eric Bill of Bills, next door to me, he's looking to do his grand opening, even though he's been there now for a while. You know, he's an appointment only, but I know that he wants to have some kind of grand opening thing going on.
I know he's got some plans in the works.
He does, got some like good plans. I'm not going to share the plans because
we'll live
that's
then.
For him to do. But we will do another block party thing. I want to do something else.
Yeah.
So I got to get him to figure out when he wants to do his thing so that he'll be solo.
I think he had a date picked out already. So
he did, but I haven't talked. I got to talk to him. You know, being sick, I just got out of the zone for a good chunk of days.
Yeah.
So I need to regroup with my buddy and find out more what's going on. And then focus on a block party like after that again.
Yeah.
And that's why fun. I want to get like farmhouse provisions.
Oh yeah.
Out there, maybe slinging some sliders.
Yeah,
a little BBQ and
get some Idaho beef.
Yeah, some good Idaho beef and some good Idaho beer.
There you go.
So yeah. So Painted by Jay.
Yeah. I think I'm going to change the name to it? Painted by Jay.
Painted by Jay?
Because
Is it painted?
It's painted.jay on Instagram.
It is.
But everybody says painted by Jay. So I think I might have to change it to painted by Jay.
Well, no, I think you could still leave it painted.jay just up in the thing.
Yeah.
Put painted by Jay.
Yeah.
Because mine says like Catherine and Chaz.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So you can add those little things in there. I mean, I say painted. I do. I think I probably say painted by Jay a lot.
It's got all a good ring to it.
I don't mind. I like it. Because it's hard to say. Painted hey, hit up my friend, painted.jay.
It's informal sounding, yeah.
It is. And Painted by Jay just is nice. Yeah. I like that.
Because it's painted by me.
Yeah, so what projects do you have going on, my friend?
Oh, boy. Well, right now I'm kind of head down and trying to stack up some stuff for this Boise Flea, just so I have something to bring.
I've seen. Good.
Yeah, so I've got my garage just kind of filling up with some half-finished things that I need to kind of work on. And that's kind of what I've been doing this last week. You know, girls will be playing in the yard and I'll be sitting there painting. And
how nice.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Any commissions?
I've got a couple leads.
Good.
I just finished up Eric Bill's a couple whiles ago. I finished up the front of his store.
Yeah, that
was a lot. I finished up some things, a couple of menu boards for the Roosevelt Bar in Meridian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got some other leads that people have kind of
I'm always giving you little things to do. I mean, mine are nothing, but they're fun things.
Yeah, so you know, I've got a few leads and stuff I'm working on. Staying busy.
That's good.
For sure. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, and again, for me, it's just I love being able to be at home with my girls. You know, hanging out with my daughters and watching them play and being available for them, you know, while I'm sitting at home.
Right. Well, and I know Eric and I are happier that we can likely hit you up now more and be like, hey, we're going to jump in the car in the morning and we're going to take off. We know you need to get back for the girls, but, you know, at least you're out there. Well, when you were working too, I got to say, it was kind of nice. We'd be like, hey, we saw something. And you'd be like, I'm out driving. I can swing right on by there. And you would. So that was always fun, too.
Yeah. I love picking and I love exploring. And, you know, a lot of times I'll find materials. Pieces of sheet metal, pieces of wood that are, you know, have been painted before or just old and rusty looking.
Yeah.
I like painting on that
kind of
stuff.
Do you take off like some of the loose paint?
A little bit. You know, I try to keep as much of the, you know, so I've got there's this big like 6 foot long plank that I pulled out of a house ready for demolition here in Boise. I'm not going to say where it is, but.
Never give a location.
It's got probably like 4 coats of paint. I think it was a door or like a closet door in an old house. And it's got like 4 different coats of paint, different colors.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that. You know, I like that there's corners of it that are chipping off.
Where you might see like red, green, white or whatever.
Exactly,
yeah.
Yeah. And I like that I like that character.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm actually working on my friend Chris Mannix. He does some cinematography stuff.
He did your little video.
Yeah. He's editing it right now. And I think in the next few days, I'll have a little promo video to put up on Instagram.
It's a good one.
Looking for that.
It's a good one. Yeah, nice. Well, gosh, we're kind of coming up to, you know, I like to keep these between 35 and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure, you know, how this would go today, having some blank space. And it was kind of interesting talking about myself a little bit.
Well,
sometimes
you know,
people want to know what I do or how I came about.
Your podcast is called Curating Boise.
It is.
And I think that out of all of the people, amazing people that you've interviewed and had on your show, there's one curator that you've never really focused on. And I think that's yourself. And
well, thanks, Jay.
I think it's important for people to kind of hear your side of the story.
I guess I do curate Boise. I mean, grazing tables and vintage. Yeah, it does it. And that's why I came up with that name. Yeah. I feel like I, you know, well, what I do. You know,
how many families in Idaho can say they had savory and sweet cater their wedding? You know, hundreds of people can say that, you know, played a part in their biggest day. And that's a big thing, too.
Yeah, that is. Well, thanks, Jay. I appreciate that.
Well, thanks for having me on.
I
sit here and talk to you for hours.
I know. I love chatting with you, and you're going to be in on a couple other podcasts in the future as a co-host. I think you have great dialogue. You've got an amazing voice, and you're a good friend.
Oh, thanks. And if we can figure out the timing,
We got to get the timing down. But I think I'll pick up a couple more of these morning slots.
Yeah, I like it. Coffee. You
know, coffee and chat.
Yeah, coffee talk.
Coffee talk. Yeah. Well, thanks. And hey, thanks again, everyone, for listening in on Curating Boise.
Thank you very much. Have a good one.
Hey, thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Hope you guys like what you heard. If you want to listen to more episodes, please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. To see how I'm doing my part in curating Boise, check out my Instagrams at SavoryN, that's the letter N, Sweet Inc., and at Salvage Sisters and Son. Tune in next week. Peace.